Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films New Order, Final Account, The Crime of the Century, which in and of itself just wants a couple of prepositions and we're good. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing okay, Joe. How are you doing this week?
I am very intrigued by your film list today.
Okay. Well, let's get right to it then. Our first film that I would like to talk about is called New Order, and it is a Mexican-French co-production, but it's mainly Mexican. It takes place in Mexico. In fact, the original title is Nuevo Orden. And it is basically a horror movie, a kind of a science fiction horror movie, a kind of apocalyptic science fiction horror movie. The other two films I want to talk about today are documentaries. So this first one is the only one that's a total flight into fancy, although I'm not sure it's a total flight out of the real world, because it clearly is meaning to give some sort of a warning about where we may all be headed. And what is happening in New Order is, by the way, it was written and directed by one Michel Franco. And it begins with a wedding, a very, very posh wedding where there's a lot of people gathered and they're all going to have a nice time. And there's a lovely bride and a groom. And then an old man shows up, older man shows up, who used to work for this very wealthy family. And he needs some money very desperately because his daughter is very, very sick, needs to have surgery in a hospital. He can't afford it and he really needs the money. In fact, the surgery can't be done in the hospital because there is trouble going on. There's some sort of riot going on or some sort of disturbance going on. So she has to have it done at a private clinic, and he's come to see if he can get some money from the family. So this is what one might think the movie is going to be about if one hadn't, for example, seen advertising for it or heard me talking about it. It's apparently going to be about the search for money. However, it turns out really to be about that disturbance, because what happens is, as the wedding we are at proceeds, and as the old man's kind of older man goes on trying to get the money that he desperately needs for a family member's desperately needed surgery, we move away from the very posh house and into the outer world, around in the neighborhood and beyond the neighborhood in the city, and we discover that the disturbance is not just disturbance, it's a full-scale horrifying riot. And apparently people are just rebelling against the social order in every way, and there are troops in the street, but the troops seem to be causing the trouble as much as they're trying to quell the trouble, etc., etc., etc. And that is where we are for the rest of the movie, which fortunately, I suppose, lasts a little less than an hour and a half long. So at least we don't have to look at this total chaos for a really, really long time, because a lot of this movie is very cinematically ordered, but very sort of narratively explosive chaos. That's really what this movie is. New Order is a movie about chaos. And it's an interesting movie in that respect. It starts off, again, with these kinds of interesting little signals that it might be about something else. So we have that older man who's there looking for his money and trying to get it from the family. And it seems to be in sort of a class war within these people, because the family, they really want to help the old guy. And some of the members of the family really try to help him, but clearly they have a lot and he has very little, and that's unfair. But then as we go on, this class war turns into just a really big, violent bunch of chaos that occupies most of the movie. So what's interesting about New Order is that first it has a kind of an interesting subject, and it sort of makes you think what is going on when we have now what's basically a Mexican movie that deals with these kinds of things. Is it signifying that there is more chaos in countries like Mexico than we maybe had been expecting? What are we being told in a larger sense by this movie? The trouble with the movie is that whereas it's cinematically, it's really very well done. You have all of this very carefully orchestrated chaos. It sort of looks like they turned the camera on and let things get explosive, but you can't do that. You have to organize these things very carefully, choreograph it all, and it's very well done in that respect. The trouble with the movie is that even though it does have some real main characters who were following as they thread their way trying to accomplish this or that important thing during all this chaos, the psychology of the movie is so thin as to barely not be there at all. You really don't care very much about these people because you never get to know them very well. So it's a movie that has a lot of cinematic, let's say, explosiveness, a lot of visual, and for the eyes and ears, there's always something to watch. There's always something exciting going on. But psychologically, there is just nothing there at all, and that really diminishes the impact of the movie a whole lot. It's one of these rare kind of Mexican movies that gets into American theatrical distribution. Theaters are starting to reopen again after the pandemic, and I saw this in a movie theater not far from where I live, and that's nice. But I can't say that New Order is a very exciting movie. It is exciting in a visceral sense, but in a psychological sense, in a kind of philosophical sense, it's very ordinary and thin, and I just wish there were more to it. As the old cliche has it, that I guess originally came from the great Gertrude Stein, there's just very little there. So now let us move into documentary territory and stuff which is, I'm not going to say more serious, because New Order, I suspect, wants to get across sort of a cautionary message that is important about the chaos that is always impending just beyond the thin veneers of civilization. But in these two documentaries, we have different kinds of very real world horror, really, which are always worth thinking about. Final Account is a movie about the Holocaust, and it is it has a certain amount of archival footage in it. There is footage from the 1920s and the 1930s and 40s, mainly the 30s and 40s. There is that, but mainly the real selling point of this movie, Final Account, is interviews with very, very old people who remember what was going on. Now, the movie was filmed primarily, the director, by the way, is one Luke Holland, and the movie was filmed by Luke Holland primarily around 2008. So a lot of these people, I'm sure, are no longer alive because they're very old in this interview footage that we have in the movie. But these interviews have now been assembled and put together again with all kinds of archival footage. And the title of the movie, Final Account, is sort of suggesting that since these people are very old, this may be the last time we have real Holocaust survivors who went through the Shoah, who witnessed it firsthand, who are very fortunate, if that's the word, to have escaped with their lives. It may be the last time that they're able to speak because they're very old. So hence, it's a final account. Of course, it's not really a final account. I'm sure there will be many, many more movies that tell the story of the Holocaust in many other different ways. But this movie is very, very interesting because of the people that it focuses on and the very candid and honest ways in which they speak to the camera. The movie is organized very carefully, I would say. It starts off by sort of bringing us into the topic, and we get some of our first-hand accounts from these people, again, mostly just talking into the camera and obviously answering questions to interviewers who are just the other side of the camera. Then we start to get into different areas of it, and eventually we get into people who are there's one scene with young people who are talking with one or two of the older people, and the younger people are skeptical about all this. They're not skeptical that the Holocaust happened exactly, but they're skeptical that they've really gotten a full account of it and that they're really getting the truth of it, and they're not really sure how much of the stuff that they're being told is real. And that's interesting because some of it sort of borders on Holocaust denial. And then there's another part of the movie where we get into at least one of the old witnesses who doesn't think the whole thing was so bad, and who feels that, this is one of those things that happened, and, we all went through it at the time, and this is just kind of how life is, and I'm not really sure it was as bad as people are saying nowadays. So the movie's kind of interesting, the way it sort of imperceptibly moves us from one level to another of different ways of thinking about the Holocaust. But mainly, the movie is these first-hand accounts of people who were really there and went through it, remembering what it was like. And, there are certain themes that seem to come up quite repeatedly. For example, the idea that I was just a kid and I was in the Hitler Youth. It wasn't because I particularly wanted to join the Hitler Youth. It wasn't because I particularly understood anything about this. It was something that everybody was doing. And it was something that my parents wanted me to do. And so, of course, I did it. And as soon as I didn't have to do it anymore, I was just tired of it anyway. It's that kind of thing a lot of the time, bringing back what the great philosopher Hannah Arendt called the banality of evil, how a lot of the stuff that went on during that horrific time was in itself just sort of ordinary and seemed ordinary to a lot of people. However, the movie also contains a lot of testimony of people who did not regard it as evil, as ordinary or as banal at all, but people who insist that many more folks then admitted it, really knew what was going on, and didn't really want to speak up because they were afraid to, or because they were too morally cowardly to do it, et cetera, et cetera. So again, we get, for a movie on this kind of subject where there is really only one way that people ought to think about it, there's quite a number of different points of view and perspectives that are brought to bear in the movie. It's a very well done movie in that respect. And the archival footage tends to be pretty vivid. It's not particularly horrific. There's not a lot of concentration camp death footage. But we get a sense of what Germany and surrounding countries were like back at the time. And we hear, you know, what life was like in different camps and so forth. So I always quote, Jill, when we talk about the Holocaust movies, and there are always so many of them, my great friend Stuart Kluwans, a very brilliant film critic of The Nation, once wrote that when yet another movie about the Holocaust came out, another film, another documentary, another drama, and somebody said, how many of these do we have to have? And Stuart said, well, maybe 6 million would be a good number. So I think that's a very, very trenchant and memorable remark. And we're nowhere near 6 million yet, but there can never be too many movies about something as horrifying as the Holocaust, which was still going on when I was born. Is not that far in the past, you know. Final Account is not the best of the movies about the Holocaust, but it's puts another perspective on it and brings it back into memory, and I think that's a valuable service that any movie can do. Our final film I want to talk about a little bit today, Jill, is called The Crime of the Century, and it was made by Alex Gibney, who is one of the most important current-day movie makers with a political point of view. He's made many documentaries that, as producer and director and this and that, in this case he's director, that deal with very current, urgent issues that are facing us all. And The Crime of the Century, and by the way, this is basically, it's a movie, but it's also a TV miniseries. It's two episodes, each of which are about 2 hours long. So I guess technically that makes it a TV show rather than a movie, but especially during the pandemic, when so much of the new movie stuff was coming out as streaming fare that we would see on our computers, I think The Crime of the Century counts as a movie as much as it does as a TV show. So again, it's two episodes, and they are each about 2 hours long. So you basically have here a four-hour-long movie. And what is it about? It is about the opioid crisis, and it is especially about the villainous persons, and I will say the villainous capitalists, who appear to be, in Gibney's view, are, and I think it's a very reasonable case to make, responsible for the horrible plague of addiction to opioids, and also to things that then tend to supplant opioids when people can't get opioids or can't afford opioids, namely things like heroin and fentanyl. So that's what this movie is about, and the movie places the blame very, very squarely on the Sackler family and on their, on Big Pharma generally, but primarily on them and on their company, Purdue Pharma. And they are in the news right now because there's yet another settlement coming out that's involving Purdue Pharma, and it looks to me like this family's going to pay a big fine and then get off scot-free, even though, according to Alex Gibney, and I think he makes the case very persuasively, this family unleashed untold horrors on the world. Now, what they did was they simply developed a new product, OxyContin, and a couple of related products, and then they marketed them relentlessly and downplayed the addiction problem, the addictive nature of these things. Very, very similar to what happened in a slightly earlier time with the tobacco industry, who were peddling a product that everybody knew was very bad for you, but they downplayed the product, and especially they downplayed the addictiveness of it and said, well, people are just smoking because they like to smoke. That's all. It's all a question of just hands off. Let people do what they want to do. And that's very much the way things happened with opioids. The idea was, well, people need to be treated for their pain, and nothing will happen to these people that's bad because they will just get over their pain, and then they'll stop taking the drugs. And if the pain never goes away, then they'll just have to keep taking the drugs, but that's not our fault. It's just the way the world is. And the next thing you know, you have a horrifying opioid crisis on your hand, as America has and has had now for quite some time. Again, Gibney places all the blame on the Sackler family and on Purdue Pharma. Whether to place all the blame there is really justified or not, I'm no expert. I can't make a definitive judgment on that. But I will say that Gibney makes a very, very provocative case. And however we choose to apportion blame for this on the Sacklers or on other people, it certainly reminds us that the opioid crisis is still very much going on. We should all be educating ourselves in it. We should all be thinking about it and thinking about what we can do to make this go away and prevent this kind of thing from happening again. And in that respect, The Crime of the Century is not only a fascinating movie to watch, it's a really important movie. So that is my partly fictional, somewhat non-fictional story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films New Order, Final Account, and The Crime of the Century.